That screeching is the sound of two Tasmanian devils. They might sound tough, but these animals face a very uncertain future. Every year, thousands of Tasmanian devils die from contagious facial tumours, which are almost 100% fatal. On this episode of Microbe Talk, I'm speaking to Dr. Andy Flees from the Menzies Institute for Medical Research at the University of Tasmania. Andy's team is working on a potential new vaccine that could one day save the devils from this unusual disease. And just a quick note for the listener, we're recording this on Zoom, so apologies for any deviations in the sound quality. So I know that most people in Tasmania and Australia are probably really familiar with the Tasmanian devil, but in the rest of the world, maybe not so much. So for those who may be unaware or maybe less familiar, what is a Tasmanian devil and why are you interested in them?
So Tasmanian devil does not look like the Looney Tunes character and it doesn't really act like that. But it did get its name for something similar. So when the first Europeans colonized Tasmania, they would hear these blood-curdling screams in the night, and they thought it must be the devil incarnated there, so they said it was the Tasmanian devil. And when you actually see the animals, they're fairly small. They're, you know, 4 to maybe 10 kilograms, so the size of a small dog. But they do make some pretty loud vocalizations, and they pretty fierce sounds when they're fighting with each other over food or during mating. Unfortunately, the largest extant carnivorous marsupial is still alive. So that means all the other bigger marsupials that were carnivorous are gone. The thylacine or Tasmanian tiger was last observed in 1937. The last one died in a zoo. And part of the reason that one's gone is that it was hunted pretty much into extinction. People thought they were eating sheep and cattle, so they just got rid of them. The devils are a really interesting animal too. They're mostly solitary, but they do interact with each other at times, and they can cover very large distances. There's reports of covering up to 20 kilometers in a night. And if you ever watch them trying to find food in a video, you can see they're following their nose. So they have a very sensitive nose, and they're trying to sniff out carcasses or maybe some easy prey animals like a young joey from a wallaby or something that's just out of the mother's pouch and might try to go after. So they do a lot of interesting things, and they're really fun to watch too. If you see them eating and interacting, they really use their paws a lot. And for Americans, it looks a lot like a raccoon the way they're using their paws. So they're very dexterous, and that's something that's could be useful to us in the future.
But they are endangered, right? So like some of the now extinct mammals in Australia, they were hunted. But the main threat that we're going to talk about is the devil facial tumor disease. So what is this disease and why is it such a big problem?
Yeah, the devil facial tumor disease is a really unique type of cancer. And it's a transmissible cancer. And that means it started with a single clonal cell in one devil, you know, 25 or 30 years ago, or maybe a little bit more. And that single cancer cell went on to infect, and that's not usually a word you use with cancer cells, but it went on to infect a second devil, and that infected a third, and then it's just kept going, and it's been an unbroken chain of transmission for at least 25 years now. And you mentioned that they are an endangered species now, and this devil facial tumor disease is the main reason they're on the endangered species list. So it was first observed in 1996. A photographer took a photo of a devil with a very strange growth on its face. And it just looked like an ugly picture and nobody thought too much of it. But then people started seeing more devils with these growths on it. And then eventually Mena Jones from the University of Tasmania trapped one of these devils, and people started collecting more samples. And through cytogenetics and genetic sequencing, they found that all of these tumors had the same genetic background and that it didn't match the host. So you'd see the same mutations and chromosomal rearrangements over and over in these devil facial tumor cells. And these mutations and gene rearrangements and chromosome rearrangements were not found on the host. So it was clear that the tumor cells themselves were going from devil to devil to devil. And when they first started seeing this and noticed that it was spreading like wildfire across Tasmania, that's when they went on the endangered species list, because it was so unique. We just didn't, well, this was long before I was here, that nobody really knew what it was, and it was really scary, and it was basically killing every devil that got it. It was a long time before they found any devil that had survived from it. And everywhere it's gone, on average, it's knocked the population down by 82%. So major declines. And it basically kills all the devils before they get to 3, 4, 5 years old. So there's only these young devils, and then once the devils start mating, they get the tumors, and then they usually die within a year or two. So it's been quite bad, and the tumors all over, covers most of the state now. But the good news is it hasn't caused any local extinction, so it doesn't infect the juveniles. So there's always a new population coming up and getting in one breeding cycle. And the devils actually dropped their breeding age. They used to breed when they were 2 year olds, and now they breed when they're 1 year olds, because there's just less competition from older devils because they're not around. So it's caused some pretty interesting ecological changes in the devil's life history that way.
Yeah, so it's changed the entire structure of the population then, if it skews much younger now than it did before. So how does it spread between the different devils?
So the most likely mode of transmission is through devils biting each other. And we've never, physically observed a devil getting the tumor, because it's tumor cells, you can't see it. And they haven't done experiments where you put one devil in with a tumor and let them fight to see, because there's ethical reasons not to do that. But all the evidence suggests that the tumors are transmitted through biting, and they're big tumors growing on the face of the devil. And there was a study by Rodrigo Hamidi, I think in 2012, showed that most of the tumors were in the mouth, starting in the mouth of the devils. And what that suggested, or they hypothesized, is that the devils would have big tumors on their face, external part of their face, and the devils would actually bite into the tumors, and then those tumors get seeded into their mouth, either through wounds or through the gingival crevices by teeth. So it's actually the one doing the biting that very often got the tumors. And we think that a lot of the transmission probably occurs during mating. So the devil mating ritual is very brutal. The males will, sniff out females, and then they'll actually drag them into a cave or a burrow and just keep them there for several days or even a week, brutally keeping there and biting a lot. So both male and female can come out of those mating interactions with a lot of wounds. So it seems likely that that's a major point of transmission.
Obviously, it behaves differently to how we usually think of cancer, in that it's transmissible. But in terms of how it then works within the devils, does it kill them by spreading through the body, as you'd usually expect tumors to progress?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, because when I describe this, I usually call it a cancer, an allograft, and an infectious disease. So the transmission part is an infectious disease. The allograft, it has to get by natural foreign protein responses. But once it gets there and seeds, it does act like a cancer. So it'll start proliferating and form an initial tumor mass. And sometimes if that tumor gets big enough in the mouth, they just can't feed anymore. You'll see a tumor actually just holding the mouth open, and they can't eat or swallow anymore. Or it can actually eat through the mandible, and they can't close their jaw anymore and eat. And devils really need to have that strong jaw pressure for ripping off meat and cracking through bones. So it can kill them through starvation. But in most cases, about at least 2/3, the cancer is actually metastasizing and spreading throughout the body. So you'll see it in the lymph nodes, the lungs, the liver, the kidneys, a lot of different places. And we've seen some pretty horrible ones in the field where there's, multiple ulcerated tumors all over their body.
So I guess the big question is, how can these tumors be transmissible between different individuals?
So there's a lot of factors that go into that, and maybe this will be a time to jump in and say, so initially when I was talking about the spread of the devil facial tumor disease across the state and then the killing of a lot of devils, that's through the original devil facial tumor, which I'll call DFT1 from the rest of the talk. There's actually two different devil facial tumors now. So in 2014, Dr. Ruth Pai from the Menzies Institute for Medical Research discovered a cancer down in southern Tasmania and took a biopsy and brought it back. And when the diagnostic tests were done, it wasn't devil facial tumor disease. It wasn't the DFT1. And then 3 more devils in that area were sampled, and they all had, again, matching genetics and chromosomal rearrangements. So it was clear it was a second type of transmissible cancer, which is really crazy, because the only other known transmissible cancer in mammals is in dogs. So devils have 2 of the 3 known ones in the world. So that's a pretty bad sign. So the first one, DFT1, originated from a female devil. It had 2 X chromosomes, but the second one came from a male devil because it had a Y chromosome. So that was an early tip-off that this is a different transmissible cancer. And so, let me take a step back here. So I think your question a minute ago was, why is this transmissible? How can that be? So the early hypothesis is that devils are only located in Tasmania. It's a small island population, and they're a bit inbred. And there's some truth to that. Their genetic diversity is pretty low because they're only found on this one small island south of Australia. So low genetic diversity likely plays a role. Low genetic diversity goes hand in hand with low major histocompatibility diversity, and those are usually the proteins that are targeted in transplant and allograft rejection.
So the major histocompatibility complex, if we could just go into that, it functions in the immune system. Right, so my understanding is that these genes are what the body recognizes as itself. So if another cell has those same genes, then the body thinks, oh yeah, this is one of my cells, so I don't need to protect against it.
Yeah, I think you explained that better than I do. I get into all the molecular business of it, and I think that was a good response. Yeah, so the major histocompatibility proteins, and I'm talking about the class 1 type here, there's various versions of major and minor histocompatibility action antigens, but I'll talk about the class 1 here. And I think a lot of people know what T cells are now after COVID. So, you know, people think of antibodies to neutralize the virus, but once the virus gets in the cell, then T cells need to be able to know which cells are infected. And so the way this works with COVID is the virus gets chopped up and little peptides or parts of the proteins get put on the surface of the healthy host cells, your cells or my cells. And that allows T cells to come by and figure out what was inside that cell, if there's a virus there or not. So that functions for all types of immunity. Anytime you want to have a T cell response, you have to have this major histocompatibility. And it's highly variable across individuals. So the chance of having two people in the room with, you know, six matching MHC class 1 alleles is very, very low. So as you said, this is how something is identified as self. So if somebody gets a kidney transplant, for instance, and there's different MHC on it, it's probably very likely going to be a rejection. But in the case of devil facial tumors, there's probably a few matches on the tumor cells with many of the devils, so a few proteins that look like self, but there's likely mismatches in most cases. But what the DFT1 cells have evolved to do is to downregulate these self proteins, so they just don't express them on the surface anymore. And that does open up another interesting question, because there's, in most species that we've studied so far, with most of the knowledge coming from mice and humans, if you don't express MHC on the surface, it should raise a flag with the immune system and says, where are the self proteins? You know, we got to see your ID card. And there should be an attack and killing of those cells by natural killer cells or some other type of innate immune cells if those are not present. But somehow the tumors manage to not express the class 1 major histocompatibility proteins and not be rejected by these other mechanisms. So we think the major means of immune evasion is downregulation of MHC class 1, the self proteins, but there must be secondary mechanisms in action to shut it off.
Understanding how the disease can hide from the immune system, this is leading on to your recent work, and you're trying to develop a vaccine to stimulate the immune system so that it can fight off these tumors. Could you tell me a bit about the idea behind the vaccine and then how the development is coming along?
So I'll take a step back first and talk about the previous vaccine trials that were done and a bit of other devil immunology. So Professor Greg Woods, who started this devil immunology project and trying to make a vaccine, started in 2006. And at that time, we had no antibodies for devils. We had no genome. He basically had no resources to get started. But within 10 years, he had developed an initial trial vaccine. And the way this vaccine was done was that they cultured the DFT1 tumor cells in the lab. They stimulated with them with the interferon gamma protein to upregulate these self proteins, the MHC class 1. And then they killed the tumor cells, mixed them with some adjuvants, which are just something that stimulates an immune response, and then injected those back into healthy devils and then challenged those devils with DFT1 cells to see if it was protective. Unfortunately, that vaccine didn't protect most of the devils from getting the tumors, but when they then came back and gave live devil facial tumor cells that had been stimulated to upregulate the MHC onto their surface, the self proteins, and injected those back into the tumor, in 3 of the 5 devils, the tumors completely went away. They went from pretty large tumors, probably the size of almost a golf ball, down to nothing in just a, you know, probably a little over a month, maybe 2 months. So that was really exciting, because we know the devil's immune system can do it with the proper stimulation. So that's one part of really good information that gives us hope. And the other one is thousands of devils have been trapped over the last 20 years. And I said earlier that nearly all of them have died. But I think there's somewhere between 20 and 50 devils now that have been trapped and had a tumor and then retrapped, and the tumor was either smaller or the same size the next time it was trapped. So we know that the devil's immune system in rare cases can actually recognize and kill the tumor cells also. And we hope that, you know, natural evolution will lead to a population of devils that are resistant to the tumor or can tolerate it or manage it a bit better. So with all of that other knowledge gained from, you know, the field samples and the previous vaccine trials, we set out on a new type of vaccine in 2019. And one of the major issues going into this is that if we actually want to make an impact on the conservation level, we can't catch and give every devil a jab with a vaccine. There's, you know, 15,000 devils running around a state that's full of mountains, a third of the state's World Heritage Area that doesn't even have any roads. So we had to figure out a way to vaccinate devils remotely. And it's a pretty exciting idea, but a pretty daunting idea that we launched into. And the idea is to put a vaccine in a bait, and then you put the baits out in the field, and the devil comes by and eats it, and they get vaccinated. And this idea has a very good track record for rabies. So as far back as 1972 in Switzerland, they were putting attenuated rabies viruses in vaccines, in baits. And the initial ones were chicken head. So they literally put the attenuated rabies virus in a chicken head and threw it out for a fox to eat. And they found that the foxes could be protected from rabies that way. The strategy's solid for rabies. And so we're trying to now apply this to the devil facial tumor disease.
Yeah, so I think also worth mentioning is if anyone who's listening is interested in seeing how this works, there's a short video on the Microbiology Society's Instagram now with one of the Tasmanian devils actually taking the bait from one of the automatic bait dispensers. So that's worth a look if you want to see this in action. So the vaccine would have to survive being consumed. It would have to get into the devil's system via the stomach and the digestive system.
Yeah, one of the ways we think it could work is that if they bite into a bait, some of the vaccine spills into the mouth, and devils will often have little cuts in their mouth because they're chomping up bones. But also, we want to hit the younger devils with the vaccine, and young devils often have teeth erupting. So anybody with a baby that's had, you know, teething issues and staying up all night because the baby's unhappy about that, these devils always have teeth breaking through the gums. That provides another portal of entry for the vaccine. And even more mature teeth, there's a gingival crevice by the teeth. So there's a few different ways it could get into the oral cavity. The vaccine, the viral vector that we're using is at this point, a human adenovirus, and these are pretty hardy viruses that can be transmitted through the fecal-oral route. So there's also the potential for these viruses to be swallowed, hopefully survive the low acidity of the stomach and get into the gut, which is a very immune-rich part of the body, and hopefully induce some systemic mucosal immunity there. So we'll really try to hit both the oral immunity and the gut immunity with the vaccine.
And then given all this progress with the vaccine and dispensing the vaccine, do you think it's an optimistic outlook for the Tasmanian devils, or is there still quite a long way to go?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a good question. And, you know, being realistic, we just don't know if we can do this. Nobody's tried to make a vaccine for a transmissible cancer before. Nobody's studied the devil immune system. So there's a lot of things going against us. But if you look at what's happened already and then where we came from in 2019, where we started this idea, it does give me a lot of optimism. So going to 2006, when Greg Wood started on the vaccine approach, within 10 years, he had made a vaccine that could induce regressions in experimental tumors. So that's pretty good progress. I mean, not a lot of people do that on human cancers, even with all the resources available. Another good thing about these tumors is that because it's a clonal tumor, we're fighting the same enemy every time. So in humans or dogs or any other species, the cancers arise individually. It's different mutations, different things driving the cancer, and you have to figure those out for every tumor in most cases. We're looking at the same enemy every time. So if we can make one vaccine, it should work for a lot of devils, or make two vaccines, one for DFT1 and DFT2. So that's an advantage that we have. The other advantage that we have is that the community is really behind us on this. So Tasmanians are always writing and sending letters and donating funds for research, and they really want to see us succeed in this. So, you know, getting to the heart of your question here, so we came up with this oral bait vaccine in 2019. and really had no idea of how to do it at that point. So the first thing we had did was identified a potential viral vector to use. So we're using a human adenovirus serotype 5, which is used in one of the oral rabies vaccines. So it suggests that you can use that in a bait. In the paper we published recently in the Journal of General Virology, we show that this human adenovirus serotype 5 can infect devil facial tumor cells and can express transgenes. So in that viral vector, we encoded the devil interferon gamma gene. And when it gets into the devil facial tumor cells, it expresses devil interferon gamma. It's secreted out of the cell and it upregulates the major histocompatibility or self proteins on the devil facial tumor cell that's infected with the viral vector and also the other cells around it. So that's pretty exciting to know that's working. And the other part of it we didn't know how to do was the bait. So we got really lucky in 2020 where we met with Linton Staples, the CEO of Animal Control Technologies, who makes baits for controlling invasive pests. And he was really excited about the project and offered to custom make baits for us and supply a whole bunch of baits. So we did a first study in 2021 of testing baits. And based on previous research, we thought these baits could be pretty effective for devils. But unfortunately, we found in this very small trial that the devils only got 7% of the baits we put out, and other species like possums, quolls, which are devils' closest relatives in Tasmania, and even paddy melons, which are like tiny little kangaroos, were eating a lot of the baits. So we need to rethink how we can get the baits out there. So we're also working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, National Wildlife Research Center, and they had some automatic bait dispensers that they use for rabies in selected areas. So they shipped three of those over. And when we found that we put these out in the field, that the paddy melons didn't know how to get the baits out of there. The possums weren't very good at it either. Some of the quolls figured it out, but the devils were by far the best of getting these baits out. And that's the video you mentioned before. You can see a devil, it basically stands up on its hind legs, leans on the dispenser, reaches in a tube and pulls the baits out. So it's really excited. And then they just hold it in their paws and eat it. So we went from devils getting 7% of the baits to devils getting about 55% of the baits. So we're currently working on refining the baits, finding a scent that's more attractive to devils and less attractive to other animals, and more palatable to devils and less palatable for other animals. And we'll refine the bait dispenser and find some ways, potentially using image recognition, so it only puts out a bait when it sees a devil. So starting in 2019 to now having a viral vector in hand that we could use for vaccine trials and having a good idea of what to do with the baits, we're pretty excited where we can get to. And every time we talk to people, they offer to help on this. So we have some pretty fantastic immunologists and some pretty good ecologists we're working with to try to fill in the rest of the gaps. With the team we have and the community support, we're pretty optimistic of what we can do in the coming years.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting topic as well, because like you were saying, there's the immunotherapy side of things, but then there's also the ecology and the conservation side too. So finally, is there anything else you wanted to mention for the episode?
I just want to say thank you to the community and everybody that's helped us out, all the scientists that put their hand up to say, you know, send me some devil facial tumor cells, I'll test this in it and let you know what we find. We get letters coming in from third and fourth graders saying, you know, we baked some cookies and we sold them, and here's $20 to support your research. And several industries and business partners around Tasmania regularly support our research. And we have a lot of great conversations with people in the Tasmanian community. So none of this happens unless people are interested, and people are interested in saving the devil and helping give them a bright future. So thank you to a lot of people for your help, and thank you for talking to us today and getting some more people thinking about this interesting problem.
Thanks for listening to Microbe Talk. You can view the Tasmanian devil video I mentioned earlier on our Instagram, which is at microbiosoc. And you can read Andy and his team's paper in the Journal of General Virology. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a comment wherever you're listening.